Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Javier Malarino is the conscience of his country, a cartoonist and moral compass to whom Colombians turn for the truth about their politicians and civic leaders. But an unexpected encounter brings him face to face with doubts about an incident in his past that resulted in a politician's death. This is the first novel that Juan Gabriel Vasquez has written since he returned to Bogota after years of living abroad. He has said it took him a long time to feel that he had, quote, the moral right to deal with Colombia in fiction. Mr. Vasquez's newest novel is titled Reputations, and he joins me this morning from Los Angeles. Welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you very much, Carrie. Good morning.
What is that moral right to write about the country of your birth? I mean, you belong to Colombia. Colombia belongs to you as much as anyone else who lives there. Isn't that true?
Yes. What I was trying to discuss when I said that was the fact that it took me a long time to learn how to deal with my country in fiction, perhaps because of the fact that I grew up thinking that you should write about what you know. When I left Colombia, I was 23. I left in part because of these feelings of estrangement after a decade of violence in Bogota, related to the drug trade and the war Pablo Escobar had declared on the country. So I left before having published any books, and I left feeling that I didn't know the country, that I didn't understand the country, and so that I wasn't allowed to write about it. This is why my first book is a book of stories set in Belgium and in France, the places where I lived in Europe before spending 13 years in Barcelona. And it took me several years abroad, living there, to understand that the fact that I didn't quite understand the history of my country and its politics and its public life was precisely the best reason to write about it. And so this is how my first novel was born, The Informers. And since then, I haven't written one single page of fiction that is not obsessively Colombian, obsessively about our life in my country and the relationship between what we call the public life, history and politics, and private individuals and private lives.
When you left in 1996, I'm sure that's a very difficult decision to make, especially when you don't know if you'll be back. Is it something that, I mean, there's a certain amount of relief that you're leaving the chaos behind, but is there also an amount of a feeling of shame that this is a decision you have to take? Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. There were a couple of decisions behind my decision to leave the country. And one of them was quite personal and to some extent irrational. It was the fact that I wanted to become a novelist. I had finished law school, but from the middle of my career of those studies, I had realized that the only thing that interested me in life was trying to write fiction, trying to learn how to write fiction. And leaving Colombia was part of this program, mainly because I think there was an unofficial tradition in Latin American literature that you leave your country in order to learn to write and to learn to write about it. This is what Gabriel García Márquez did in the 50s and 60s. This is what Mario Vargas Llosa did in the 50s. Every major Latin American writer of that great generation we call the Latin American boom, García Márquez, Vargas Llosa, Mexican Carlos Fuentes, the Argentinian Julio Cortázar, all these people left their countries and they were able to write the best novels ever written about their countries. So I was following kind of that tradition, or rather that superstition in a way. But as the years went by living abroad, I started realizing that there were deeper motivations in the fact that I had left, and that they had to do with that chaos you talk about, with the fact that I had just been through the most violent period in Colombia's recent history, that those drug wars that we lived through in the 80s and 90s until the death of Pablo Escobar in 1993.
You know, I have to say that I'm surprised to hear you bring up Marquez so early in our conversation, because, and you know why I'm saying this.
Yes.
I know you don't want American readers to think that the only thing that comes out of Colombia is the magical realism that Gabriel Garcia Marquez is associated with. I know that isn't true, and I know you have to explain that a lot. So I don't want our conversation to be influenced by the idea that, you know, that you're writing like Marquez, and this, if you want to understand Colombian literature, that's how you understand it.
Yeah, well, there's I think I wouldn't want American readers not only to think that magical realism is the only way in literature to deal with Colombia, but also to deal with Latin America. This new way of looking at the world and exploring the world that came to the forefront in the 1960s, magical realism, what we call magical realism, and that we associate with this great masterpiece, 100 Years of Solitude, was not only just one way of exploring the world of Latin American reality, but not even the prevalent way of doing it. Vargas Llosa was already writing his wonderful realist novels. Jorge Luis Borges, a short story writer who is very influential in American literature, was already writing his short masterpieces that have nothing to do with magical realism. So what I always try to discuss is how the whole idea behind my relationship as a Colombian novel with magical realism comes from the misunderstanding that that states that since I was born within the borders of Colombia, then I should get the influence of Garcia Marquez, you know, have it fall on me. And what I usually say is that one thing is literary influence, and another very different thing is literary influenza.
Ah.
And this is what it's supposed to happen to me, that Garcia Marquez is a sort of contagious phenomenon. Whereas the place he was born in, his culture, his family culture, but also his social culture, were so different from mine that what would be astonishing would be that I wrote in the same way as he does, that I try to give the same shape he does to my own personal obsessions and themes and demons, if you will.
You said a minute ago that you left Colombia to pursue writing and to try to understand the country that you'd been born in. I'm interested in not only what you learned about writing, but what you learned about yourself. You know, as a Colombian, as a human, not just as a writer.
Well, this has been the whole process. I think about novels as this big conversation one has at the same time with the rest of the world and with oneself. I discovered, for instance, one of the most important things, why I write. And the answer is, I write because I don't understand. This was the great revelation after years of trying to deal with my country in fiction and with my position, my place in the world of Colombia, that my motivation is what I don't understand is questions, is the dark corners of our common history, but also the dark corners of our human condition. And this is what my novels try to explore. For instance, The Sound of Things Falling is the novel that I published before this one.
Mm-hmm.
It deals with our experience, the experience of my generation growing up in Bogota in the 80s and 90s, with the bombings, with the shootings in the streets, with the killings of politicians. I realized at some point that all the visible explanations of this decade, of this phenomenon, were quite readily available there in the media, in the internet. You could even go to YouTube and see a presidential candidate being shot. But I started asking myself, where do you go if you want to look for them, for the invisible side of these things, for the way these events have shaped our moralities, our emotions, our way of being parents and children and friends and lovers, the way these public events out there have shaped our private lives is what moves most of my fiction. And this I had to discover through that kind of geographical but also chronological distance from my country.
I don't know what you're going to think about this, but I've been watching the Netflix series Narcos. Have you seen it?
No, I'm sad to say I haven't seen it. There was a Colombian series, a Colombian production several years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, called El Patrón del Mal, about Pablo Escobar, with a great actor in him playing Pablo Escobar. It was a Colombian TV series that discussed that part of Colombian history, that those 20 years, in a wonderful way, and take into consideration every contradiction, not only in Pablo Escobar's character, but also in the politics of the country that allowed these things to happen, and I loved it. And so, in a way, it kind of satiated my curiosity for the time being, but I think I will eventually see Narcos.
Well, you've hit on precisely what I've discovered in the series, and I didn't think I was going to be interested because I'm not really interested in the glamorization of those times in the drug world. But you've hit it with the contradiction in his own personality and the evolution of the way Escobar saw himself. From the Robin Hood persona that he embraced and loved to victim, right? Even though he was behind so much of this terrible violence, but also the contradiction of what Colombians were willing to tolerate and how they saw him and how they saw the government and the deals that the government had to make. I'll be interested at some point if you get a chance to see it and what you think about it. But it sounds like it's been true to the series that you watched.
Well, Pablo Escobar died in 1993, the beginning of that decade of terror that we had to live through. Was more or less officially in 1984 when he killed the Minister of Justice, Rodrigo Lara Bonilla. So it's been 30 years. And the fact that after 30 years we are just beginning to discuss these things in stories, which are the way human beings understand their own past, or the best way we understand our own past, just goes to show that we haven't reached the final truth about this, that we haven't really understood what went on in the country, what allowed this figure to emerge, what circumstances created the phenomenon of first of all, of drug trafficking in that way, but also this huge criminal organization that really, really became a threat to the country's democracy. How did that happen? This is something we are still asking ourselves, and this is the reason so many novels, good and bad, and TV series, good and bad, and films and documentaries keep popping up, because we need to get to the bottom of this through stories.
That's true. Juan Gabriel Vasquez is with us if you've just joined the conversation. He's a novelist, Colombian-born, spent a lot of time outside Colombia learning to write, he says, came back to Colombia in the novel that we're talking about this morning. Reputations is the first novel that he's published since he went back to Bogota. I want to talk about this profession of editorial cartoonist that you've given your main character, the man that I described at the beginning of the conversation, Javier Malarino.
Yes.
You spent some amount of time with caricaturists to understand not just how this kind of work happens, but to kind of understand the motivation behind it, how caricatures think.
Yes, I did. This trade has always interested me. I grew up surrounded by books, by collections of cartoons, by a great political cartoonist in the Colombia of the 20s. His name was Ricardo Rendon. He was really a very influential and respected and feared political commentator. And at some point I started flirting with the idea of writing a novel about him, but I realized it would be much more interesting to invent a sort of contemporary Rendon, a figure that in the Colombia of today has that same influence and that same presence in the political debate of the country. Of course, he is inspired in real people. There's a huge tradition of political cartoonists, of influential, well-respected, powerful political cartoonists in Colombia. And I based my character in two or three of them, people who gave me their time and their knowledge and their conversation in order so that I could write the novel. But it's important to understand that this is part of, I think, not only a Colombian tradition, but also a Latin American tradition. But this is not necessarily understood in other parts of the world, because political cartoonists probably are not such an influential presence in the political debate.
You've actually just touched on something that I was thinking about as I heard you talk about Rendon. I think political cartoonists are admired in this country,
yes.
But I don't know that they're revered the way that your novel reveals and the way that you've just talked about it. And I wonder if part of that is because we know that satire is in some ways an outlet for the powerless, right? To have their voice heard in a way that in a lot of other ways they cannot have their voices heard. And so in the communities and the countries that you're talking about, that was much more necessary than maybe in our culture. What do you think?
I think you're probably right. I think that's definitely part of the situation. But it's also probably just a cultural heritage. Latin American culture and journalism comes mostly, I think, from the French idea of journalism in the 18th century and the 19th century. And this was a moment in which satirical drawings and political cartoons were very much part of the debate, and they were very, very strong and very influential, to the point that an artist like Daumier in France could get away with drawing a cartoon of King Louis-Philippe with his head in the shape of a pear, making outright fun of the king and getting away with it. And this speaks to the power they had, the kind of the feeling of being invulnerable that they had through humor. And I think humor is a big part of the thing. I think humor allows this kind of political comment to go unchecked, because obviously to a column, the victim of a column, the politician who is criticized in a column, can fight back with words. But you cannot respond to a cartoon without making a fool out of yourself. So this gives cartoonists a sort of impunity that in certain political environments, let's say, is very, very powerful. And this is what happens in the Colombia of today. Of course, when I went to France to talk about this novel, journalists used to say to me that this no longer happens, that this is no longer there, that cartoonists are not feared in this way, that it is not believable that they receive threats, that they can actually be dangerous for anybody. And then 3 months later, the Charlie Hebdo massacre happened, and I started getting all these really very sad emails saying, well, now we get the point. This can actually happen.
I've interviewed a young Pulitzer Prize editorial cartoonist here in the States a couple of times. He writes, he's at the Buffalo Evening News, but I think they syndicate his work. And he was talking to me recently about the art of blending fact and fiction in effective cartooning. And I thought you might find a little bit of that discussion interesting.
Right, and I'm using fiction often to get at this truth, even though I have facts to back up my opinion.
I'm sorry, that's Adam Zyglis, and he's saying, I use fact, but I also use fiction as a way to communicate my opinion to my readers.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you and what you learned and the time that you've spent with the caricaturists?
Well, one of the things they were more adamant about was the fact that a political cartoonist can distort reality. He can modify reality, but he cannot invent reality.
Right.
So a very important thing for them is the fact that they don't lie. They don't make things up. They every successful political cartoon is based on a strong fact, and their job is only to distort it in a way that makes it that makes a point, that makes it both recognizable and funny, and that makes a point through humor. And this is very important for them. They would never accept the idea that they're making things up or telling lies or changing facts. They just distort reality, but they can never invent it.
It's kind of that that blending of what I think of as authenticity and absurdity. It's the absurdity that maybe draws you in, and it's the authenticity that keeps you there and thinking about it and realizing that it's speaking a truth.
Yes, very good. I think that's quite close to what my sources would believe.
I was reading something in the New York Times feature by the book that you did last summer, and you said something that I want to ask you about. You said, the books I read give a sense of structure to my life as much as the books I write. And that made me wonder if there is a book that, you know, is foundational to you as, you know, in the structure of your life, something that you go back to as a touchstone, and what that might be.
Yeah, there are several. Well, I believe that realizing that literature was the center of my life, that I would change what my life was supposed to be to accommodate literature and to include the fact that writing fiction was and reading fiction were central to me. Well, when I think about that, I realize that the books that allowed me to take that step then become very important, become really definitive in my life. And when I think about that, when I think about the books that made me want to become a writer, I always think about 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and about several others in the Latin American tradition, and about books in other traditions, such as Joyce's Ulysses, which was important for me in my 20s. But this relationship we have with the books that we love changes over time.
That's true.
And I don't know why right now I'm going back in time, and the novelists of the 19th century have become really important for me, particularly my beloved Russians, Dostoevsky and Tolstoy and Chekhov. And I think this is because they discuss, which is what I try to do in Reputations, by the way, they discuss serious moral issues. They had a vision of the novel that was moral in the sense that it explored difficult human conflicts with an eye to everything that can make human life miserable, to the way we hurt each other, the way we suffer oppression, the way we cheat and we lie, and how do we deal with the consequences of that? This is what Anna Karenina by Tolstoy does, and Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment and Chekhov's Stories. So I'm drawn right now to those books that explore in a clear-sighted way our moral conflicts, and this is what I'm trying to do in my fiction too.
I also think that with an eye, those Russian novelists that you love and what you've done in Reputations, with an eye to no easy moral outcome,
yes.
Right?
This is very important. At the center of Reputations is a question. Both characters, Javier Mayarino, the cartoonist, and this woman, Samantha Leal, who pays him a visit and asks him to try to remember something that happened 28 years before. And this is the central mystery, should we say, at the core of the novel. But what they realize, ultimately, is that it is very difficult to get a clear answer about that, about their personal past, about the validity of their memory, and of memory as a way to know our past. They don't get a clear answer, and this is very important for me. This question that is not answered is the theme of the novel, and I believe in literature. I've always believed in literature as a way of asking the most interesting questions possible, but not necessarily finding the answers. Mm-hmm. The exploration of our conflicts as human beings, of our shortcomings, is what is interesting for me, and not reaching any sort of easy answer that soothes the reader. I think the role of literature is to tell us that the world is much more complicated than we thought, whereas other kinds of narratives, self-help books, whatever, try to tell us that the world is less complicated. I try to take the opposite impulse, yes.
We only have a couple of minutes here, but I want to note that I'm talking to you on a day when a milestone is happening in Colombia.
Yes.
And this is that this deal has been reached with the FARC, and a treaty, or an agreement, I should say, is going to be signed. And the BBC has been reporting on this, and they've done an in-depth interview with Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos, and he tells the BBC's Lise Doucette about what it took over 20 years to reach this peace deal, and I thought we could just listen to a little bit of this.
You set up a secret channel. What year did you start having a secret contact in the FARC to start talking?
Many years ago.
How many years ago?
Many years ago, about 20 years ago.
20?
Yes.
Even before you were the defense minister?
Yes, very much before. I've had back channels for many years, trying to see if the conditions were ripe, and then we started the process.
You're very convinced of what you have achieved?
Yes.
Do you have a plan B if the people of Colombia vote no on October the 2nd?
We will go back 6 years and continue the war, the FARC. That's the plan B.
Juan, what do you think the people of Colombia will say?
I think they will massively vote in favor of the agreements. One of the great things that have happened to my country in the last months is coming to the awareness of how important this is. This peace treaty effectively ends the oldest war in the world right now. The official beginning of the war is 1964, which is when the FARC guerrilla were created. But you could say that the war actually began 15 years before that, with a period we call La Violencia, which is which was a kind of civil war between the conservatives and the liberals that ended with the conditions that allowed the FARC to be created. So we are ending a war that has been going on for 60 years, probably, that has caused 7 million victims, counting the dead, the wounded, the displaced populations, created the conditions in which other horrible phenomenons have emerged, such as right-wing paramilitarism and state-sponsored crimes that we call the false positives. So ending this war is one of the most important things, I think, to have happened in the world in the last half century. And Colombians have understood that even if they have to make some sacrifices in terms of the way they see things and the way they see the FARC, for instance, having them participate in politics and having them get lower punishments than the Constitution would state in a normal time. Well, that's all quite legitimate to save all the lives that would be saved, that will be saved with the end of the war. And we're coming to terms with that idea, and we should massively vote in favor of the agreements.
Well, it has been a great pleasure for me to talk to you on a day like this in your country's history.
Thank you.
And just to talk about the novel. Thank you so much.
It has been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Juan Gabriel Vasquez's novel is titled Reputations.